Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Moro Sanbonani, hello, how's it? Welcome to another episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Shabbat Shalom to everybody who is anticipating a wonderful Shabbos like I am as we celebrate day one of level four lockdown. Welcome to it, my fellow subjects of lockdownistan, as I like to now call this, and overall, I suppose, day 36 of the lockdown. As the memes have been firing off on social media, some people calling level four just a strawberry-flavored version of level five lockdown. So welcome to it, and welcome to another episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. It is a Friday, which means your favorite fat boy is back on the airways. I have a jam-packed episode for you. I've restructured, I've really jigged it a little bit. This morning, you're going to hear from four voices. Obviously, there's a bit of a struggle to get everybody on. It is live technology, but after this break at 10 past 9, I'm going to introduce you to two.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I should say welcome back to me. We're having technical glitches. The gremlins are in the system. Of course, it is Workers Day, so I think the gremlins have gone full to work whilst we sit at home. Apologies to that, my dear listeners. And welcome back, as I said, to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I did try to explain before this last break, and that I have a very jam-packed panel of guests with me today, and I'm going to introduce them onto the show right now, just before these gremlins decide, hey man, we need to come back on the show. I've got Mr. Dumor Denga. He is a regular contributor on the Big Daddy Liberty Show and a host of his own podcast, one which I hope you will be joining and listening to, called the Man Patriot Podcast. Man Patriot Podcast. Dumor, let me just say a quick welcome to you on the show, just to check you online.
Yes, how are you, Sihle? Thanks for having me, and it's always a pleasure to be on here.
Excellent, brother. Welcome to the show. Let me just run through my list here. Mr. Hugo Kruger, who, of course, is a voice that the listeners are used to. We did speak last time with Hugo as we looked at the issue of the COVID-19 pandemic, if I can still call that, and government responses to it across the world. Hugo, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Excellent. And of course, a voice who I think you guys are really going to like. Very different ideas, and a voice who maybe some of you have supported electorally. I'm talking, of course, about Mr. Jack Miller, who is the leader of the Cape Party. This is a party that did contest the last election. I just want to make sure he's on the line. Jack, good morning to you.
Sihle, good to be with you again.
Fantastic. Fellas, let's hop straight into it because we're going to take an ad break at 20 minutes past 9 and Rob Hutchinson will be joining us at that stage as he talks about their initiative to deal or to push back essentially against what is now level 4 lockdown. But before we get into any of that, I want to recap very quickly, Hugo, and I'm looking to you on this one, on the issue of the lockdown. Hugo, we had a conversation last time you were on the air around the various government responses to it around the world. You cited Sweden and a few other examples as countries who didn't go in a lockdown. You basically pioneered a different approach to dealing to pandemics. Do you want to just quickly recap that conversation and do so in the context of maybe where we are right now?
Okay. So to quickly recap, there's technically three strategies that a country can follow to deal with a pandemic. The first one is eradication, that you have to do very quickly, very early on. New Zealand and Taiwan did it very successfully. Almost everyone else couldn't do it early on. Then you've got group immunity, that Sweden, Belarus, Brazil, Tanzania, Malawi now, and Ghana, I believe, is going for those strategies. So basically, they let the virus rip a little bit, but they do protect the vulnerable population. So the healthy population can build group immunity and in a sense protect the vulnerable. Then you have something which they call lockdown in Europe. It's called confinement. That's France. It's Italy. It's the UK. UK actually went group immunity, then lockdown. You've got the Netherlands and Belgium. Some countries, like I think it's Netherlands and Switzerland, they had a partial lockdown and then it went more strict. So there's a mixed model when we talk about lockdown. And just the message is not all the lockdowns are the same. South Africa, in my view, has got one of the most strictest lockdowns in the world, and it is not based on any scientific evidence.
And, you know, there are many more voices now, especially as the data comes out, that just openly agree with you. I mean, you even have the United Nations having issued a let me call it a stark warning to say, you know, South Africa is basically, in their own words, you know, employing a very violent and overly restrictive lockdown. I mean, when we last spoke, at that stage, there was the specter of the military on the streets, you know, doing, you know, sort of assaulting people, making some of them do frog marches, rolling around on the ground, harassing people who had gone out to buy groceries. Jack, I'm going to come to you because, you know, you're someone who's been critical from the start around the potential abuses that can and do happen when the state is given this amount of power. To basically shut down, albeit they'll argue temporarily, the civil liberties of people. Like, what have we seen here? Like, are we seeing something becoming a bit of a precedent being set by governments around the world, including South Africa?
Yeah, we absolutely are, and it's horrific to see. And I mean, I want to start off by saying that it's really great to be on a panel with other people who have a discerning eye and are willing to look at the system with critical thought. And one of the first casualties of this crisis 5 weeks ago was critical thought. People forgot how to think for themselves. And what's great is that we have opinion here. Now, if people can cast their minds back, one of the first things that the COVID-19 task force did was to say that the only opinion that matters is the South African government's COVID-19 task force. And with threat of prison time, with threat of fines, the opening document there said that they can physically arrest you if you resist. They can physically take your DNA samples, potentially the term was, I think, apply Medicaid, you know, they could be sticking needles in you. I mean, the broad scope of what they allowed themselves to do is absolutely mind-blowing. So what's good to see is that people have come out of their shells over the last few weeks and begun to challenge these views. And now there isn't just one opinion. There are multiple opinions. And, you know, a few opinions that I've been looking to over the last few weeks, there's someone by the name of Dr. John Ioannidis. He's a professor of epidemiology and medicine at Stanford University. And about 3-4 weeks ago, he openly came out and said, listen, the numbers do not reflect what the media hysteria is saying. This is, and he just released a study last week. It's 50 to 85 times less. The fatality rate is 50 to 85 times less than it was predicted initially. So, you know, now that the science is coming out, we've got to accept that governments got it wrong in the beginning, and we've got to change our direction here. And the economy's taken such a hammering from this lockdown that we're going to lose a lot more lives from that than the fears that we initially had over the virus.
Absolutely. And Dumo, let me bring you in here because, you know, you've been someone who's also been very critical and engaging on social media on this particular issue, and also warning around the dangers of, you know, governments that then appropriate moments of crisis to push basically more, let me call it authoritarian, sort of rules onto societies. Again, South Africa is just one example. It hasn't been just South Africa, has it?
Yeah, no, it hasn't been like that. I heard in China, I don't know if it's true, but they've also had some crazy regulations on top of that. But in South Africa specifically, I mean, I think what the main issue is that the government has kind of infantilized us. And also there's this massive lust for power that is quite evident. It's almost like as if they're waiting for this moment. And now you even saw with the cigarette ban. I'm not a smoker. I'm not a drinker. But still, I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, these things are spiteful if you had to look at it correctly. Because what happens now is that the president comes and says, oh, there is, you in level 4, you will be allowed to purchase cigarettes and stuff like that. Then one day before, NDZ comes along and says, no, you're not allowed to do it. They like having this power. It's what they wanted from the beginning. And they're going to try keep this going. They're going to try keep this going for as long as possible, in my opinion.
And that is my fear. I did make mention on my social media that there does seem to be a continuation. Guys, I'm going to take a quick ad break, but I just want to leave you at this thought, and we'll come back and have Rob on the line. But there does seem to be more politics at play here than actual a science-based response to COVID. And South Africans, it's destroying the goodwill that had been established. Let's say you are someone who believes in lockdowns, but this would be something that's destroying that goodwill of complying to them. And by the way, we've had a 99% compliance rate according to the government's own research on this issue. But let's pick this up after the break, as we also introduce Mr. Rob Hutchinson to the conversation, and we'll begin to unpack this in a bit more detail, and we'll have a bit more time to have a conversation.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I said before the break, it's a lit show, as the young ones say. As we basically, I'm bringing you voices who you'll never often hear on mainstream media. Guys who are basically, who stand for liberty and freedom and speak the cause, if you will. Or prosecute the cause, rather, for liberty. I've just introduced Mr. Rob Hutchinson to the line. Let me just double make sure he's on. Yes, he is. Rob, of course, is the MD of Dear South Africa. That's dearsouthafrica.co.za, which is an established South African NGO, which facilitates public participation on government policy formats and formations. Rob, welcome to the show. Just to make sure that you're with us.
Hi. Good morning. How are you doing?
Very, very well, Rob. Very good to have you. You are, of course, joined by Mr. Dumo Denga, who's the host of the Man Patriot Show, Hugo Kruger, who's a writer and analyst for the Rational Standard, and, of course, Jack Miller is also on the line, who is the leader of the Cape Party. And we were just talking before the break about, just a quick recap of how basically COVID-19, the different responses by governments across the world, as Hugo introduced for us. And we've gotten to the point of basically breaking down what we've begun to see as an almost authoritarian creep by governments across the world. Rob, I'm going to go straight to you because, you know, you've just joined us. This is something you've also been raising on your social media as a bit of a problem. Not a bit of a problem, but a big problem. The sudden crackdown by governments around the world, and South Africa in particular, on ordinary citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a rather concerning situation that's developing. And I think it's down to a number of factors, and most of them are political rather than scientific based right now. Yeah, the government, in my opinion, made the wrong decision. And I think a couple of speakers here will share that. Right in the beginning, the wrong decision was made. It was not based on any scientific data and so on. And it was understandable in the beginning. You know, when you don't have enough data, you tend to picture worst case scenario and take the appropriate measures to in case that scenario does actually play out. However, we seem to have fixated on a solid outcome here, and it's not pliable in any way whatsoever, which is the wrong approach. I mean, as we get new data in, then we should be amending our approach and solution, which we're not. There's become a political game here. And I believe it's because government has realized that they made the wrong decision right from the beginning. The measures were far too drastic. The lockdown measures were far too drastic. And they can't backpedal now, unfortunately, because they'll be facing significant legal suits into trillions of rands if they had admitted that the measures that they were taken were incorrect. So not only that, there's the political side as well, which is coming into play now, with factions inside the ANC seeming to be facing off against each other. There's much more to this than meets the eye. But my biggest concern is we're not following scientific data.
Absolutely. And I want to go to Hugo very quickly, because I want him to speak to us in greater detail on this. And I'll come to you, Jack, just now. But Hugo, you've been raising this for a very long time, especially as the data started trickling in, that this could be an overreaction to the COVID. I remember you mentioning that there's been a litany now of studies basically tracking the numbers of people in the population who have the antibodies for COVID, and basically point to the fact that COVID is quite widespread already in some places.
Yeah, so I want to go back quickly to January. There was this boat called the Diamond Princess ship. 1.75% of the people on that boat died. That was a very old population, scaled proportionately to the U.S. population. You had a death rate between 0.2% and 0.6%. So that's 200,000 to 600,000 people who get the virus will die. That study was made by Dr. Johnny and Anidis at Stanford in January. So people should not tell me the science was not available from January. It's a complete lie. We are seeing the antibodies are substantiating that. In California, it's 200,000. Jack spoke about it earlier. In New York, it's 500,000. In Germany, it's 400,000. It is in the ballpark of what the Diamond Princess told us. It's anything between annual seasonal flu and three times annual flu. So it is a bad virus, especially in densely populated areas. The thing is, though, South Africa does not have the same population density as New York or London or Paris, which are the hard-hit cities of the world. That's the first thing. So we are not scientific. Second, our data makes absolutely no sense. I've gone through it. I thought we had a second wave. I was wrong. Basically, April 7th, South Africa has not reported any data. Why? We don't know. We just forgot to do the processes. Also, our curve looks like it's growing exponentially. It's complete nonsense. It grows exponentially because our tests have gone up exponentially. So the more you test, the more people you find. But it is not reflective. It's not representative of the population. So we cannot make any sense of the data. So what does government do? They run on doomsaying models. And a model from Imperial College by Dr. Neil Ferguson was completely wrong. It estimated 500,000 people in the UK will die. Now it's 20,000. Okay, that's a major blunder. So if they are still using WHO models or whatever models has been used, it is wrong. You cannot run a new virus on a predictive model without having data to understand the spread of the virus. So it's an unscientific approach. Secondly, the measures they have taken to say supermarkets can stay open and other places can't stay open, there's no science behind that. Because you can get infected in a supermarket. You can get infected everywhere. It's the same thing with this masks they're pushing. There's no science coming out saying masks protect you unless you are in an acute situation, which is an hospital. So I would just want to refer everyone. Go look at the Swiss Propaganda Research Institute. I've got a list of all the antibody studies that have been happening, that have been coming out. They all substantiated what we knew in January. So nobody should come and say we didn't know the science.
Jack, let me bring you in here because Rob actually mentioned a critical point, absolutely critical point, which is the use by various factions within the ANC of this crisis, in inverted commas, to basically fight it out amongst themselves. You have a president of the republic who on the one day makes an announcement, level four, and just as an example, cigarettes will be allowed now. And 2 days later, you have main rival at the policy elected conference, Dr. Dlamini Zuma, then say, no, I'm in charge of COGTA and I'm saying no to cigarettes. Are we seeing a factional fight play out here? And the second question I want to put to you is the dangers of a politician who cannot walk back a decision, who cannot say, mea culpa, I was wrong. Talk to me about that also.
Well, what we're seeing is a state that's out of control. It's a megalomaniacal state that's infatuated with power and will do nothing to stop at increasing its power at the expense of the entire population of this country. The poor, the middle classes, the businesses, everyone is going to be hammered by their actions. With regards to Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and the cigarettes, you know, this is a beautiful point of, we use the term lockdown laws. These are not laws. Law is common sense. And the word common sense comes from the sense of the commons. It's the law of the people. Mm. And Dlamini Zuma said that there would be no cigarettes because she received a email or petition where 2,000 people said, okay, we don't want cigarettes.
Mm.
As of the evening after she said this, someone put a poll up, a petition, to say, do you want cigarettes to be reinstated as legal? When I saw the petition in the morning, so 12 hours later, there were 370,000 people that had signed it. Mm. So this is not law. This is government decree. They are doing whatever they want when they want, and there are suspicions that Dlamini Zuma may have connections with an underground cigarette selling cartel. So who knows what speculations there are there. But yes, this is not law. This is decree. This is a government that's gone way beyond its mandate. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned court cases earlier. The Cape Party absolutely intends to take the South African government to court on a number of bases, because this is serious. This really is serious. And the sooner we put an end to it, the sooner we can get this country back on track, because we were going into recession before this even started. With this lockdown, and what they're going to do is they're going to try and say, oh, no, no, the reason that the economy is so bad and now we're junk status is because of the coronavirus. This is 26 years of ANC policy, which has got us here. And you cannot, and people who are praising the president with his 500 billion rand bailout, you know, these people are economically incompetent. This is where they've gotten us to in 26 years. Do we think all of a sudden that the ANC now is going to pull the country right with their communist policies? Absolutely not. So, you know, as Rob was saying, this is a political issue, which makes it even more complicated. And what we need to do is not ask the politicians to roll back their policies. It's about time that civil society takes a stand. If we sit here waiting for them to correct their errors, we're going to be waiting forever. Civil society, we need to get together. Ratepayer society needs to get together and potentially push for a tax revolt until they lift these absurd lockdown rules and allow people to get back to work.
And I'll get to what some of, you know, the suggested actions are going to be. Rob, in fact, is one of the loudest voices, when you put it that way, on social media, who's actually put action to pen, pen to action. I lost myself in that metaphor. But I want to come to Dumor on this one, because Dumor, you made the point online that, and you've used the record of history, which is always a good indicator of things, to make your point, which is once politicians introduce some sort of legislation or set a precedent of some sort where they appropriate more powers for themselves, it's very rare that once the crisis moment is over, that that precedent recedes. In other words, they go back to, you know, giving people back in inverted commas. And I say giving people in inverted commas because our liberties don't come from politicians, but they sure can be infringed by them. You made the point that, you know, once you cede a certain principle to politicians, you never actually quite win it back, do you?
No, not at all. There's a saying, and I hope I get it right. The saying says there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government plan.
Absolutely.
The reality is that if you look at the lockdown levels itself, there's no level zero. There's a level one. And that level one still has restrictions, and the government can still, you know, implement more restrictions based on that. So it's quite clear that, you know, the government was never going to release a plan where it stated that at this particular point, we are going to relinquish our power. And so clearly it's a power play. They want control and stuff like that. So I'm not really impressed with the plan. And, yeah, definitely. I mean, governments, they just want more of our power. And as Jack said, you know, we need to have some sort of resistance against it. That's how I see it.
Rob, let me segue back to you then, because from the beginning of this, and maybe as I say this, I know Hugo is going to lose his mind, so I'll go straight to Hugo after you. But from the beginning, this was always a fight, political fight initially, between the securocrats in government and people who I can broadly call the constitutionalists, if you will, in government, but then sort of morphed into the factions then finding a home in each of those camps, and it then played out into this mess. Talk to me about the implications of this for the ordinary South African.
The implications for the ordinary South African are quite dire, I think. You know, when you have a ruling party that is broken into these obvious factions, the only people that are going to suffer are the majority of South Africans, the public. You know, if you look at what is actually going on here, I think the ruling party saw an opportunity more than anything else, an opportunity in this crisis to further their agenda, Now, when you have a factionalized party like the ANC, each faction is going to see a different opportunity, and that's where the conflict has come in now. Each faction has their own agenda, which they want to drive forward. And that can only mean disaster for South Africa, because it's now inward-focused politics instead of outward-focused civil activism. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that the solutions are going to come from civil society, as one of the – I think Hugo mentioned that earlier on. That's definitely what's going to happen. Political parties, even from the opposition side, have no power during this time. It's blatantly obvious. Especially
to jump in there, I was about to say, aside from the DA, we basically haven't heard from, in any meaningful way, any other political party, either some form of dissent or even some form of real support for the state. Like, it's been almost weird in a sense, has it not?
I think it's not weird at all. I think it's what's to be expected. What we're seeing now is the great reveal. We're seeing which parties actually have effect, which parties toe government's line, and which parties actually are opposed to government. For instance, the EFF, it's blatantly obvious that they're a faction of the ANC now, isn't it? Mm. Because everything that they say, or the government puts out, or the ANC puts out, the EFF seem to reaffirm and drive that agenda. Whereas 6 months ago, they were opposing anything that came out. All the other political parties which are silent are showing that they have no power in parliament in any way whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So even the DA, to an extent, I mean, they're making a lot of noise, but they're not being effective in what they do. And it's not for any other reason that they simply can't. They don't have that power. They're constrained by legislation, or during this time, they're constrained by what is called temporary legislation. It's not temporary, because temporary would have an expiry date. There's no expiry date in any of this temporary
legislation. Can I intervene there?
Absolutely. Just before that, just a quick time check, guys. I'm going to take an ad break at 22, so we've got about 2 minutes. Jack, yeah, you were saying?
I think we need to look at this with a very clear eye, and the DA is as accountable for this as the ANC. In fact, this phase process that we're going through right now is exactly what John Steenhuisen put through 2 weeks ago. And this COVID-19 task force, we all remember, this includes the Freedom Front, the EFF, the Democratic Alliance, the ANC. Back when, as Hugo was saying, this evidence was available in February. In February, it was very clear that the fatality rate of this was anywhere between 0.1% to 1%. So the information was there. So the DA, the ANC, the EFF, the Freedom Front, every single one of these parties is culpable for what's happening right now.
Fellas, I must take an ad break. We'll pick it up after we come back in our last 10 minutes of our chat. I think anybody who's listening to this is beginning to see the broader picture of just exactly what's been happening and how these conversations have not been happening on our mainstream media. Guys, a quick ad break, and when we return, the final 10 minutes of this chat with my wonderful panel, and we talk about what exactly you, the dear citizen, can do to push back.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Guys, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I am your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. In the last sort of 9 minutes, I want us to pivot the conversation towards setting out, perhaps, especially of the guys who are on conversation, excuse me. You probably have fired up South Africans who are listening to this and now who are thinking, oh my goodness, have I been lied to by the political elites? Am I really as, what's the word I'm looking for? Out of it, helpless, rather, that's the word I'm looking for, in this entire situation. Rob, I'm going to come to you, but before I do that, Hugo, I think you may have wanted to make a point before the ad break. I just saw you sort of unmute yourself.
No, I'm unmuted.
Okay, sorry. I just wanted to make sure. It is a bit tricky when there's four guests. But Rob, let me come to you because, you know, when I introduced you, I did mention that, you know, you're the MD of Dear South Africa, which is, you know, this nonprofit which facilitates public participation in government policy. This is the very area right now where I think South Africans have just totally been left out and you've had politicians run the show. What are you guys planning at the moment? I know there is some action that you guys are working on.
Yeah, well, throughout this whole lockdown, we've been running surveys and participation projects to get feedback from the ground so we can actually get accurate data. And one of the campaigns we ran was an amendment to the lockdown regulations, asking people how they felt about it, what regulations were too tight, what are not tight enough, and so on. We got fantastic response on that from the first one was 43,000 respondents, and the second one we ran, which was in response to the minister's call for comment on the level 4 regulations, we delivered 21,000 comments in 26 hours directly to the minister. Now, the beauty of that is that we have all that data. We have the content of the responses, we have content of the submissions, and we have categorized them in our report. So we know what the public sentiment was, we know what was presented to the minister, and so on. So when the minister came back and said 2,000 people complained about cigarette smoking, and so on, my question is, what about the 60,000 people who didn't? Because the minister said they got 62,000 responses. Why are we focusing on the minority? Well, I'm glad we are to a certain extent, but outside of us, Rob. But still, like that's concerning because they're not following the data in any way whatsoever. Mm. And they're not following public sentiment. They're not, it seems to be, just a decision that's been pulled out of thin air. Mm. And to me, that is wholly unscientific. It is unconstitutional. As far as the Constitution, Section 36 says that it allows for the reasonable suspension of rights during a crisis like this. This is not reasonable. What they've done is completely unreasonable because it's not based on anything other than their personal feelings from our point of view. There's no open data sets that we can check from government. Or anything else that can justify a reasonable suspension of rights. Mm. So therefore, we want to take action against that in the courts and get South Africans behind us and, you know, force the government to make decisions based on reasonable data and legitimate data from that point of view, yeah.
Absolutely. Jack, I'm going to bring you in because you also mentioned that, you know, you guys as the Cape Party might be looking to do the same. And I hope you and Rob can get together and maybe combine efforts to a large extent. But what would be the sort of, you know, maybe at this stage, you know, just sort of thinking about what would be the sort of basis that you guys tackle this issue?
Yeah, well, that's great to hear what Dear South Africa and Rob's just mentioned. So absolutely, I'd love to talk to Rob afterwards. We think there is quite a broad spectrum of issues in which the actions that the government have taken are entirely unconstitutional. So I think that court action needs to happen, and we would certainly love to coordinate our efforts. I mentioned earlier that what's so absurd about this is that the government almost acts like they are the masters of the economy, and people seem to have forgotten the fundamental basis of what it is to be in a democracy. We have elections. We vote for the people that we want to represent us. We pay taxes to this administrative body to carry out administrative functions that society needs. We're the ones who call the shots here. The government cannot tell us, sorry, you can't work. We're taking away your ability to earn an income. And I'm going to quote exactly what's happened here in Cape Town. Ian Nielsen of the DA has said here in the city of Cape Town, there will be zero tax holiday for rates and taxes for the citizens of Cape Town. So they're taking away our ability to earn an income, yet they still expect us to pay government bills. I mean, it is absolute insanity. So the only way that we resist against this is we say, listen, you guys have slipped your leash. You don't understand who's in control here. We're going to stop paying taxes. We're having a tax revolt.
And I was about to say, Dumo, I want to bring you in here because we've been mocking this to a large extent on social media to sort of, you know, everybody seems to be taking a pay cut and a big economic knock, financial knock rather, during this period. Everybody except, of course, political elites and those who are, you know, the sort of cronies attached to them. I mean, you have a situation where the cronies are licking their lips, for example, at the prospect of 500 billion rand being dished out by politicians. You know, at the face of it is, you know, to respond to COVID and the economic impact. But, you know, the record of history has shown exactly who is often first in line in the queue of getting money from the state when it comes to, you know, stimulus spending in inverted commas.
Yeah, I remember I posted this on Facebook and I said that cadres are going to get, they're going to be the first ones to get it and probably the only ones to get it, to be honest. And when I mean cadres, I mean it K-H-E-Y-D-A-S, not the traditional way of spelling it. But the reality is very simple. Like these guys, it's so funny. They can decide that no, you guys need to pay tax, but then you can't work, right? Then at the same time, they still can make decisions about our lives and how we should run them. It doesn't make sense. And they don't pay the price for making the wrong decisions. We pay the price. So this is the absurdity of the levels of controls here, that the guys that are making decisions do not have any skin in the game and they can decide what we want. And I think that for me is totally unfair.
Absolutely. Guys, I have run out of time. This is the curse of radio. Perhaps as a final quick word from everybody, just how do people reach you, especially if you have a campaign that you're going to be embarking on to push back on this? Rob, let me begin with you. How did the folks reach you?
Best way is through our website. That's dearsouthafrica.co.za. And the campaign that we're running now is /unlockdown. And I think it's pretty clear what that means. Yes, but dearsouthafrica.co.za/unlockdown.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Rob. And Jack, how do the folks reach you?
They can visit us at our website, which is www.capeparty.com, or they can join us and like our Facebook page, Cape Party, Free the Cape.
Awesome, awesome. And Hugo, I know you've been doing quite a bit of writing. How do we see your stuff and how do we reach you?
Well, it's Rational Standard. I'm also on Facebook, but I don't want people to reach me. I just encourage them to think for themselves and look at the stats.
Excellent. Thank you, Hugo. And tomorrow, last but not least, the Man Picture Show. How do the folks reach that and how do they reach you?
Yes, they can just go to www.manpatriot.com. If they want to email me, they can just email me at dumo@manpatriot.com, or they can just, you know, tweet at me at Dumo Denga on Twitter.
Excellent. A big word of thanks to every single one of my guests, guys. I really appreciate this. This was a fantastic show, and I hope it lit a fire in you, dear listener, to say that there are alternative ways of looking at all issues, including this one. After the break, we wrap up the show and we look at what the Newsweek will look like ahead.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As we quickly wrap up, you know, I think you've literally heard from a litany of different voices, guys who are very well researched, and who have been paying attention to the issues, and at the heart of it, who are very concerned about both, yes, COVID-19 as a pandemic. I mean, one shouldn't get the impression from this conversation that, you know, it's being dismissed as a non-issue. I mean, you know, especially for someone like me, who falls into all the risk categories of COVID-19. Of course, it's a massive issue. But I think what's really at the heart of it is a conversation around don't lose sight of other things that are super important too. Your freedoms as an individual, your ability to look after and care for and provide for your family, for example. These are just as equally as important as our response to COVID-19. So I do encourage you to check out the various platforms that were mentioned on here. Dear South Africa, for example, .co.za, as they look to launch court papers in response response to this. You know, the CAP parties have also mentioned they'll be doing the same, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, alternative voices out there. You know, I brought you Dumo Denga, who is a podcast host of the Man Patria show. So please check that out also when you have a bit of time as you do your podcasting. So a big word of thanks, of course, to all my guests. And I think the big issue I'll be watching now is the battle that wages, as I think a lot of South Africans begin to question the different levels of lockdown. You know, what are they intended to do? I'll be doing a show later today called Whose Lockdown Is It Anyway? On the Big Daddy Liberty Show, as I ask this question, you know, who's governing here? Is it the securocrats who are basically using COVID-19 as a means of rolling out, in some cases, repressive action against individuals and citizens? Or is it the public health response, which is what we all want, you know, massive testing and tracing, assisting those in need and providing, you know, PPE, for example, to our frontline health workers? Like, what response is being prioritized here is the question we're putting forward. So you can check that out on my social media. Make sure you find Big Daddy Liberty on all your social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And, of course, find the Big Daddy Liberty Show on YouTube as we begin to look at these issues in greater details. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the BDL show here on Chai FM. I will see you next week, Friday. Remember, Shabbat Shalom to all of you who are heading into Shabbos, and I will see you next week.